Technology. It's such a big part of our lives. It can be fun. It can be convenient, just like this podcast, which is why University of Missouri Healthcare is proud to support podcasting on KBIA. Technology can also save your life. That's why so many people turn to University of Missouri Healthcare. Its hospitals and clinics offer you the latest technology, plus a medical team whose skill and knowledge are unparalleled. You know technology makes everyday life a lot better. Well, it's true for your healthcare, too. University of Missouri Healthcare, the care you deserve from the team you trust.
Hello, and welcome to Under the Microscope, KBIA's weekly look at stories in science, health, and technology. I'm Raymond Tongakart. Feeding cattle on grass is supposed to help the animals thrive, but Missouri's most popular grass for feeding cattle may be doing more harm than good. As Jake Godin reports for Harvest Public Media, solving this problem is a little more complicated than resodding a lawn.
Come on, cows! Jake!
Cattleman Roger Zimmert Sheet has been ranching just south of Sweet Springs, Missouri for more than 40 years. For most of that time, his cattle fed on Kentucky 31 tall fescue, more commonly referred to as K31.
Come on, cows!
The drought and insect-resistant grass was planted in nearly every part of the state when it became popular in the 1950s and 60s. But a few years ago, he began noticing a troubling trend.
The cows just spent so much time. There was drainage through here, and those cows made an extreme mud hole out of that whole drainage, and they just stood there, and they switched their tails, they threw mud up on their backs.
Standing in water and using mud to cool off are common signs of overheating, just one symptom of the sickness that comes with grazing on K31. They're more serious and obvious side effects as well, especially during the winter. Zimmersheet's cattle would lose their tails, but hooves and ears falling off are possible as well due to restricted blood flow and cold temperatures. So recently, Zimmersheet switched to a different fescue called Max-Q.
This pasture in particular the fescue seemed to be extremely hot on the cows. I could just see I had to do something, and I'd read about this Max-Q. When I made this switch, then I went directly to another 80-acre pasture and did the same thing to it.
The switch solved the problem. The price? About $4.50 a pound for new seed and a year's worth of extra field maintenance to make sure that the K31 didn't come back. Now, agriculture groups are trying to convince more of the state's ranchers and dairy farmers to change their grass. One of these groups is the Alliance for Grassland Renewal. Formed last year, the group's goal is to replace K31 pastures with safer, non-toxic varieties of the grass.
This grass is infected with a fungus.
Craig Roberts is the University of Missouri State Forage Specialist and chair of the Alliance. He's been studying fescue toxicosis for 25 years.
And the fungus helps the plant survive, it, much like a vaccine would help an animal survive. It lives inside the plant, but it does release toxins that cause poor animal performance, a lot of health issues.
The alternative grasses like Max-Q contain what Roberts calls novel endophytes, or new strains of the same fungus inside K31. But Roberts and his team say these novel endophytes are both non-toxic to animals and have the same drought and insect resistance as K31. But many cattlemen and dairy farmers have been unwilling to switch, Roberts says. The difference now is that it's easier to show how effective the grasses are, particularly because of the greater variety of novel endophytes on the market and increased government support.
Yeah, I just go out there and we holler at them.
On the side of a dirt road just north of Highway 63, about halfway between Macon and Chillicothe, lies the University of Missouri's Forage Systems Research Center. The center's superintendent, David Davis, helps manage 1,200 acres of research pasture.
They get used to it.
Yeah. One of his current projects involves a small area of grass where novel endophytes are growing next to K31 varieties. Cattle will eventually graze, and their responses to the different varieties will be measured. To Davis, it's like giving the cattle a buffet.
Now, we don't know if we'll see differences, but knowing cattle, they'll probably figure it out. And they're pretty selective in their grazing patterns once they know what's in front of them. Essentially, here we have a cafeteria-style buffet, and they get to choose what they eat.
By measuring what the cattle prefer, Davis says the center can ensure some amount of quality control for the endophyte, instead of what he calls the Wild West type of setup they have now. Ever since the switch, Zimmersheet says his cows have been doing much better. They don't stand in water and pant, they gain more weight, and they produce more milk for calves. When considering why more cattlemen don't switch, he suggests it may simply be that it's all other ranchers have known.
I think it was kind of like me. If they saw the results of how it works and the condition that the cows stay in, the calves certainly, you know, wean off as heavy or heavier than calves that were running on infected pastures.
Between the outreach efforts of Roberts and the work being done at the Forage Center, researchers and extension specialists hope to encourage the switch from K31 to novel endophytes so that cattlemen like Zimmersheet can see that if the grass isn't greener on the other side of the fence, it's at least safer. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Jake Godin.
Food hubs are popping up across the country. These food processing and distribution centers make it easier for restaurants, grocery stores, and others to buy local food. The U.S. Department of Agriculture says there are more than 220 of them in 40 states, plus the District of Columbia. As Sean Powers reports for Harvest Public Media, it's a trend that's not only helping struggling farms, but also bringing in new talent to agriculture.
Max! Pick, pick, pick! Come on, Max!
Donna O'Shaughnessy and her husband are first-generation farmers in rural Chatsworth, Illinois, about 2 hours south of Chicago. They sell dairy and meat. O'Shaughnessy was a full-time nurse for many years while her husband focused on the farm. They ended each year in the red, but about 5 years ago, business took off, with restaurant owners as far away as Chicago putting in order requests.
For years, we did not think we could ever be totally sustainable, that we would always need my nursing income. But then when things really started to pick up with us, we made that decision. I would retire from nursing, and ironically, that's when we started to turn a profit because I was able to do the marketing.
And her husband focused on other tasks on the farm. This was all possible because they joined a year-round food hub called Stewards of the Land, started in 2005 by this guy.
Peppermint, borage flowers.
It's a little after 6 o'clock on a recent morning in the nearby town of Fairbury. Marty Travis and his son Will load a van with roughly 1,500 pounds of food. In about an hour, Travis drives the shipment to restaurants and grocery stores throughout central Illinois and Chicago. Basically, he's the middleman. A farmer himself, he took on this role to fill a hole in the market.
So as we go, we can incubate these farms and get them on their feet to do their own things.
Travis and his wife founded this food hub and started a second one a few years later. Members include about 40 small family farmers who pay a small fee to join. Travis says they get cheaper liability insurance, access to a much larger pool of businesses, and farmer training.
I would say the new generation farmers are a little over half of the group. Many of them were under the age of 18 when they joined. We're very interested in growing great produce, but we're also very, very passionate about growing farmers.
We recognize that there is significant opportunity for small entrepreneurs.
That's Doug O'Brien, the USDA's acting undersecretary of rural development.
For those who are willing maybe to pay a little bit more for food that comes from close by, that infrastructure is lacking, but it's growing fast. Food hubs respond to that call.
O'Brien expects the USDA to continue supporting food hubs, though some farmers worry that could lead to more regulations, even with federal support. But at least for now, that doesn't appear to be keeping food hubs from growing. For Harvest Public Media, I'm Sean Powers in Urbana, Illinois.
And that's it for this week's Under the Microscope. I'm Raymond Tongakar. Thanks for listening.